Gotta be honest, I've struggled with coming up with a good way to start this episode. And it's been hard to figure out exactly why I'm struggling. I think it's a multifaceted thing. I should say first that I don't think the episode expresses any views or thoughts that I'm not happy to stand behind. I think my guest, Marza Warzynski, does a wonderful job articulating the feelings people have around this particular topic and what makes it so important and so, at times, sensitive. I think it's an important conversation to have, and I think it's one I find myself having more and more often with friends, and that's usually the kind of thing I want to talk about on the show, so why the hesitation? I think, and I'm not 100% certain on this still, but I think I'm a bit afraid of how I'll come off. I don't want to start the episode as a white man lecturing to you, the listener, about the importance of promoting and consuming stories from across the diverse landscape of the human experience. And that's not what this episode is. This is just a conversation. One that I think white people need to have more than anyone else, because we're the ones struggling with it. Because in my white brain, there's a weird mental blank spot where I feel like I can't simultaneously say we should all be seeking out more diverse content while at the same time shamelessly plugging my own. I have this pesky old idea that lifting up marginalized voices and being an advocate for underrepresented perspectives in storytelling could mean temporarily silencing my own perspective and my own voice. And that doesn't work out great for me because I'm only alive right now. And storytelling is what I do. It's the most integral and honest part of my core being, so I get very fearful and protective when I feel like my access to it is being threatened. Now, maybe you're a super woke, fully self-actualized 21st century person whose eyes just did a full backflip in your skull listening to me talk about my petty fear of sharing my spot in line to speak at the podium. To you, these concepts seem simple and obvious, and it's a wonder why anyone would struggle with them at all. But maybe you're a bit more like me. Maybe you're wondering what the big deal is, wondering whether adequate representation and storytelling really is such an important thing. Wondering if it isn't all being blown out of proportion. Maybe you saw people freaking out over the movie Black Panther and thought, didn't any of these people see Blade or Meteor Man? We've had black superheroes before. This is nothing new. And I don't think that there are any definitive answers being offered up in this particular discussion. All I can tell you is what I got out of this conversation and others like it that I've been having recently, and that's this. First, throwing marginalized communities a bone once a decade with a big budget movie in order to pacify and satiate them should not be the end goal. And second, promoting and advocating for new and diverse voices does not mean silencing my own. It may mean more competition, sure, but that can be a good thing. It means more kinds of stories. More kinds of stories means more inspiration. More inspiration means more good art for everyone. It's not my job to compete with fellow artists or storytellers. It's my job to simply tell my stories honestly and to the best of my ability. I much prefer being a fan and a supporter to being a jealous competitor anyway. Marza gets this. She's a rising tide raises all ships kind of person. We acknowledge that we're both basking in the privilege of whiteness, but nonetheless, she's run into her fair share of roadblocks just being a woman in the biz. Point is, we're not here to speak for or on behalf of anyone other than ourselves. We're just having a conversation. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in my North Hollywood apartment, this is People Pleaser, I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my good friend Marza Warzynski about representation. A few quick notes before we start. I refer several times in this episode to people in my social group. When I say my social group, I mean specifically white, heteronormative men. Got an episode in the future coming up about identity and labels, and I'll get more into my thoughts on all of that, but for the purposes of this discussion, that's what I mean. Also, at a certain point in this episode, you'll hear the first instance of the school bells and the little children. What do I mean by that? Well, you guys, Mary and I live next door to a Catholic elementary school, and I think they go to recess about 200 times a day. I try to record when they are not outside, but every so often they get released in the middle of a session, and my guest and I just have to hope that the blanket fort muffles their blood-curdling screams. And I promise I'm not being dramatic when I emphasize the intensity and ferocity of these screams. If I didn't know they were screams of joy and jubilee and I had never heard children playing before, I would be terrified to look out the window for fear that I was listening to the beginnings of a zombie apocalypse. Anyway, you might hear the mild hum of children playing distantly from time to time on this show, and today's the first episode that has an instance of that, so just be advised. Okay, here's the show.
Being a people pleaser is a fancy way of being a liar.
I think I need to start out by asking you if it's okay. I mean, I think you're here, so I think it is, but, like, is it okay if you, like, are doing some emotional labor for me of unpacking some ideas for me? Because I'm, like, yeah. really...
And yeah, that's what it is, uh-huh. right?
Yeah, because this is stuff, too, where I'm, like, I've had my own struggles of in the current moment being, like, well, what's happening? What's going to happen to my role in
right.
the creative field? Am I being phased out now?
Yeah.
And, like, is that... Does that mean I'm unlucky to have been born in a time when we're trying to
right.
strive for more inclusivity?
Yeah.
Is it my bad fortune that I wasn't born in an even more privileged time for white straight men? And,
yeah.
You know, and I think that there's other people in my social group who with the same fears.
Oh, I hear it all the time.
Where they're like, oh, I guess I just, I guess we're just not.
Yeah. yeah. Which is like, first of all, not bearing out in the data at all, especially when it comes to casting. Like those numbers have not moved very much, not in a significant way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard a little bit for like getting representation in the first place if you don't have credits. I think people are less looking to fill up their rosters with more like white people.
Yeah.
But like, who cares? Like it's hard for everyone.
When I was doing, I told this to Sean last night, when I was doing Tribes at Salt Lake Acting Company, I had spent 4 months learning ASL for this role.
Yeah.
It never occurred to me that the role should be played by a hearing impaired actor.
Right.
I mean, I just thought I auditioned for the part and I got the part and I'm doing my best to do my job as an actor and immerse myself in this world of this, this particular way of life and learning this language and doing all this stuff. And when they said, we're going to be replacing you with a hearing impaired actor, I mean, my first thought was kind of like, well, I wish you would have made that call before I spent 4 months learning.
Yeah.
But I remember having this thought distinctly of, well, what does this mean now? Does this mean as a character actor that I'm only allowed to play straight white men, you know, who have my lived experience, that I can't step into the shoes of other people?
Yeah.
And the instant thought that came in kind of smacking me in the face was, and if it does mean that, you're fine.
You're fine.
You're fine. There's more than enough.
Yeah. And that's
jobs.
Been everyone else's experience the whole time.
Like,
right. Yeah, it does sort of come back to that idea of, like, when you're used to privilege, then equality feels like oppression, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, when suddenly, like, the playing field is leveled, when it hasn't been level for you, you're being, like, things are being taken away from you, but they're not necessarily things that belonged to you. It's just things that you were used to having. But it can feel like that feeling of like, that used to be mine and now it's not mine anymore.
Yeah.
But
it's so weird, the cognitive dissonance of being like, I know that it's good that we're opening up but also that means it's maybe a little worse for me because
because now my competition is so much higher, and my competition used to be lower, and mm-hmm. I used to be only competing with people in my privileged social group.
Exactly.
And now I'm competing with everyone.
Right.
And so it puts me at a disadvantage, but it's like, it doesn't really actually put you at a disadvantage.
Right, exactly.
It puts you at the same advantage as everyone else.
Yeah.
Who your advantages were disadvantaging in the first place.
Right, you used to have a little boost, and now slowly that's being, like, not removed, but taken.
Yeah. Again, right. You still do have the boost.
Yeah.
You just have a little less of one, but right. It's amazing how that can feel to so many people, that the knee-jerk response is, well, this isn't fair either. This isn't progress. Just taking away my lollipop and giving it to the other person, that's not progress. And it's like, well, you can't,
Yeah, even though on a broader social level it is good, and even for people who do believe that and feel that way, I don't know, I think it's kind of natural to have that feeling of, that, like, little child feeling of, like, this used to be mine and they took away my thing. But I think if that's your first thought, that's okay. That's like a normal first thought to have, but, like, set that thought aside and, like, galaxy brain it up a little bit to, like, something of a, you know, that just takes practice. And I think we do have to, like, I do think to an extent, and I'm trying to get better at this, we have to be patient with letting people learn, because it is a learning process. Like, as impatient as I feel sometimes with people having that reaction, like, that's something you don't know until you learn it. And if you've never had the chance to learn it, like, I'm trying to be someone who's patient with that and allows people to learn. Still tries to make sure that they do, but people can't know it until they know it.
Yeah, and that goes back to me asking you, is it okay if you do some of this emotional labor of unpacking this for maybe listeners and for me especially?
Yeah.
Because there is... that's a thing in the lexicon right now, is people being like, yeah, you can Venmo me for that emotional labor I just had to do to you see this online a lot in, like, online flame wars and stuff. And I understand why it can be just enormously frustrating to explain things that shouldn't need to be explained.
Or that's like a let me Google that for you kind of thing.
Uh-huh,
like
things that should. Yeah, exactly. Like,
right.
Can you just look that up? Or can you just think for a second before you ask that question?
Yeah.
But it is there. I think there are people who are genuinely looking for help with this.
Yeah.
And it is just taking a minute because it's, you know.
And I think when you're in the position of someone who feels like they have to educate someone, asking that question of yourself, like, is this someone who's really looking for an answer, or is this someone who's trolling and arguing in bad faith and, like, just being a dick?
Right.
Can I swear?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yes. Just making sure. Of course. Yeah.
Good.
I swear all the time on here.
Good.
Yeah.
Sorry to your mom.
There's going to be some things that I'm going to talk about on this show that she's not going to like, for sure. There's going to be some... Already there's been many things.
The
that
nature
have been,
of mom.
Uh-huh. But that's all good. So I want to start out here after that, talking a little bit about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about this at lunch
the other day. And I thought you said something really interesting about Tarantino as a writer trying to almost put out this idea that, like, hey, anyone who thinks that I'm coming at this with any sort of agenda or any sort of point of view is just, like, coming at this the whole wrong way. I don't have a point of view. I'm just a storyteller. I'm just talking about memories from my childhood. I'm not coming at this with any agenda. And you sort of said, well, that's just lazy and kind of irresponsible almost.
I think it's arrogant. I think it's both. And I don't know if that's necessarily where he's coming from. It's possible that that is something that he said. And I think he said sort of echoes of that. Like,
yeah, I don't think that – I'm not quoting him here. Right. But I think there is this idea that he's like, anyone who's trying to politicize this or say that I'm making a statement about
– Right. Yeah. I'm just presenting a story. But you always have a point of view. Everyone has a point of view. And as an artist, you should have a point of view. And if you don't, then it's journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two different things. And art gets better for the point of view, even if it's one that you don't agree with or have. Like, your singular point of view is what makes you an artist. And I just don't buy the idea that, like, he doesn't have a point of view in this movie. I think the strength of this movie is the qualities that are sort of like a love letter to that era of Hollywood. But that does start to expose some of his opinions about how things have changed. And
whether he means it to or not.
Right.
Whether he's intending for... Yeah.
Or if it's just sort of revealed. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was so fascinating to think that... that had never occurred to me as a writer. Mm. The idea that even if I'm just trying to tell a story that I think is just a fascinating story about where people are as a society. Yeah. And I think that this is another thing that people in my social group are like, I don't want this to be associated with my social group. I don't want this to be a white straight man's take on this issue. I just want to be an objective storyteller here, just telling the story. And I don't want people to color it with my, and it's like, again, you understand that every other social group has to, everyone colors their stories with their, everyone, the second a black man writes a story, it's like, well, this is the black perspective on this.
Right.
And so when white men are...
The female perspective. The female perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that gets, you know, stifling, I think, too, for people who are in those groups. And it reminds me of in the Hannah Gadsby special where she's, when like people confuse her for a man and she's like, oh, it's great, straight white male, human neutral, which like, of course you're not human neutral, but like we have sort of come to this point where it's like that perspective is so dominant that just feels like that is neutral. That is where we expect a story to be coming from. That's point A of most stories. And then if you're anything other than that, then it's that kind of story. But it's not really neutral. It's always colored by the person who wrote it or directed it. Always.
Of course.
You know?
It seems so obvious.
But
it seems so obvious. And then at the same time, people really are bucking against that.
Yeah.
And I think that it makes sense to be bucking against it if you've come from traditionally one of the groups that is that is like, you know, I'm kind of tired of everything I say being the queer perspective or I just sort of would like to just talk about something without having it to be tied specifically to this one aspect of my identity.
Right.
And I think that that's an interesting irony, is that white straight men in particular, you know, or white folks, white people, are seeing for the first time, like, oh, this is what it's like to have everyone color something we should have been doing all along.
Right.
But also,
and often have been doing and just didn't know that you were. Mm-hmm. I think such a good example of that is actually David Fincher. Mm-hmm. In his adaptations of novels specifically. And the two that come to mind are Gone Girl and Fight Club. Right. It's these two novels that really, not entirely, but in large part, are critiquing aspects of masculinity. And then he presents them, even though he didn't write, I don't think, either of those screenplays. He definitely didn't write Gone Girl screenplay.
He didn't write either screenplay. No.
And even just from his directing choices, he frames it in a way that's very sympathetic to those characters, that removes a lot of the criticism that's there in the screenplay and definitely there in the novel.
And it's unintentional.
And it still makes for a really good movie. He has a very strong point of view in both of those movies, but they're very different thematically from the source material.
It's very clear in the book, Fight Club, that Tyler Durden's ideas and all these, the ideas around, that the author is making fun of this kind of...
And warning about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And it is in the film.
Yeah.
But it's muddy enough that enough men saw it and thought, oh, this is the new wave.
Yeah.
We got to start our own clubs.
Right.
We,
it's like Brad Pitt's abs, like fan fiction.
Yeah. And I think that's such a... I'd never thought of that. That's brilliant. But it is a thing where it's like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he intended for it. And I think he's a good enough filmmaker. And he's got a good enough eye. And we all watch it and go, they make, like you said, for great films.
Right.
But...
They both really work. I don't know if this is a totally anachronistic story. But I once heard that, like, Chuck Palahniuk, I think he has a daughter, but he's a kid in any case, And she, again, might not be a real story, but I like it anyway, that she, like, asked one of her friends at school, like, what their favorite movie was. And she's like, Dad, he said his favorite movie was Fight Club. And Chuck Palahniuk was like, don't hang out with that kid anymore. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good advice.
That's awesome. reminds me of, like, Alan Moore hating all of the adaptations of his graphic novels. I don't know if it's the same thing, but I wonder what Chuck Palahniuk thinks about that movie. I wonder if he...
Yeah, I've heard interviews of him saying kind of both things, which is probably right. I mean, I think that it does a really good job of, like, some of that, like, late 90s anti-capitalism stuff that was sort of shallow and directed mainly at, like, Starbucks. But still, like, I think it did a good job of some of that. And what I think starts to emerge in that movie that I think is necessary, but in that movie it doesn't get all the way there, is this idea of, like, male role models. Like, and I think that that's really needed now. I think men do need to know what to be. Like, as things are changing and the things that we admire about men and masculinity are in shift, I think that, like, that is necessary to, like, have community.
I mean, I was raised on Rambo and Demolition Man and like Stallone and Schwarzenegger movies were like my, you know, my lexicon of just like, this is what it is.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know where I would have seen.
Right.
I think Good Will Hunting was like the first time where I was like, look at the tough guy cry. Like, look at him sad because he had bad things happen.
Because of the sad stuff he said, and it's okay, and we still like him.
Uh-huh. That's so fascinating. I think if I'm going to be devil's advocate again here in this thing, it's I keep hearing, I think it's because I do have the voice in my head, I keep, of this social group, but I keep hearing the argument about, like, when I hear that, like, well, we need to show better role models, or we need to understand that we're coming from a point of view, I hear the instant defeatist voice of the white male writer going, all right, so, I mean, I don't know, what am I supposed to do? I'm trying to just tell stories, and now you're telling me I have to make my stories political. I have to. You know, and it gets, like, really, like, well, I guess I just won't write anything at all. Or they just go, fuck it, I'm going to write my stories, and if you want to make my stories political, that's on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's this kind of, like, throwing your hands up in the air and being like, no matter what I do, you're never going to be happy. It's not going to please everyone, and I'm not going to say it the right way, and everyone's going to criticize it. And again, I think there's this humbling that needs to happen of you're not – we're, you know, I think that it's all blown out of proportion of it's – see, the feeling is everyone hates everything I say. Everyone's, like, taking my words out of context, and I don't know.
I mean, I think part of that comes from this feeling of, like – I feel like a lot of people now are confusing or conflating censorship with criticism. And you have to be open to criticism. And that doesn't mean anyone's telling you that you can't make your thing. They're just saying you can make your thing, but, like, we're going to still have our thoughts about it. And now we have a place where we're able to vocalize them. And
you're just hearing it for the first time.
You're just hearing it for the first time because you used to only hear people who sounded like you for the most part.
Yeah.
And criticism is good. It helps you grow. Other people have been getting criticism all along. I mean, like, if you look at Rotten Tomatoes and, like, the consistent difference in, like, films that are for or by women consistently getting way worse ratings than those by and for men, because most film critics are men. Like, this whole, like, everything around it is about, like, the narrative and who is the dominant voice. But yeah, I think a lot of people feel like they're being told they can't do something or they're not allowed to do something. And then that, of course, is going to get pushback. Like, fuck you, I can say whatever I want. Like, it's a free country. And you can. But I think your art will get better, and I think your work will be more interesting and hide less of yourself if you just hear the criticism and then come from a place that's a little more honest and maybe a little more vulnerable.
Yeah, at least try.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that your next story or next script has to be about how you're growing and becoming Vogue. It doesn't mean that that's the only story you can tell. No. It is just a matter of maybe even just awareness of it.
Yeah.
Can just be think a great starting yeah. point. My friend John and I, we were talking about anger. I asked him a similar question. I was like, what do you think we can do about this evolutionary problem that we used to be protectors and hunters and fighters, and now we don't really need to be, but we still have all this leftover anger and we have societal conditioning, or what can we right. do? And one of the things he said was, he was like, just, I guess, shine a light on it is a good way.
Yeah.
Talk about it. Be aware of it. Be right. aware that it's an issue. And I think that's a good place to start with a lot of these things.
Yeah.
If you're coming, when you're writing your screenplay or your script or your book or whatever, just with that knowledge packed in there, and you haven't gone meh to it. You haven't gone meh. I don't care about that, because I'm writing my story from a non-biased perspective, and anyone who wants to put their bias on it, that's their problem and not mine. Yeah. If you actually can accept that and weave that into your consciousness as a, that could be a good starting point. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. That thing that you were talking about with the Rotten Tomatoes scores. Have you heard about Gina Davis's documentary that she just came out with about?
I know about her foundation. I didn't know she'd come out with a documentary.
It's about the foundation. Yeah. It's about this, the similar work. And she was on Marc Maron recently talking about it, and that's where I heard about it.
Yeah.
But it was such a fascinating, I keep saying that word right now. I think it's because it's like a very, like, I'm like, oh my God. In 2019, I'm like having to redo all of this work, because I spent a few years being a little bit pushed back from it. I like right. was all in, and then I was like, oh, they hate me though. So I pushed back.
Right.
And now I'm trying to come back to the table going, I need to not be such a victim about this, and be right. more just humbled to the realities of my circumstances.
And curious.
And curious. Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely. And, but she was talking about, and I'd never even considered this, how difficult it is for female directors to just create a body of work.
Mm-hmm.
We'll kind of do this thing where we let a female director make a great film, and then mm-hmm. it's almost like, there you go, you got to do
you
it.
Got one.
Are you done?
But you know, yeah.
And whereas a male director will come out and have a great premiere first movie, and it's like, well, what are the next five? Like, let's get ready for you to be the next big voice in Hollywood.
Right. And you see that happening at film festivals, you know, like the things that get picked up and the people who get offers from film festivals, it's never the women. Those movies don't get bought. Or if they do, then there's no more offers, because they're like, well, you only do this, you do the girl stuff. And I mean, like, then you see something like the guys who did Civil War, the Marvel Civil mm-hmm. War. Before that, their main thing was like a big episode of Community. And yeah. they get this fucking franchise. Like,
they've made
and then Patty Jenkins almost doesn't get the second Wonder Woman. Like, mind-blowing stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, what is the disconnect? Like, why? Yeah. And I don't know what the disconnect is.
I read an article the other day that was talking about how it's a shame that Greta Gerwig's next film will be Little Women, because she's pigeonholing herself as now, like, she's just telling stories about women, and that's who she's going to be. And I'm like, what the fuck? It just was like, it blew my goddamn mind. I was like, what in the fuck are you talking about?
I liked the trailer. I think it's
no one
be
would
really
ever
good.
Say about the Rossos, like, oh, right. could they just do like boy stuff? They just, is that what they're
they
doing?
They just do the fighty fighty boy thing.
They're just like, what in the hell are you talking about? Like,
oh god, yeah, it's exhausting. It's just stupid, and it really does come down to like who's in the room. And. And then the other day, my boyfriend was talking about The Last Black Man in San Francisco, and he was like, well, I don't know if it's going to be good. It was directed by a white guy. And I'm like, man, maybe that's the only way that fucking thing got made, because it was written by a black guy, and maybe he needed a white guy to get into a couple of those rooms, to take a couple of those meetings, you know what I mean? To just be taken seriously. Because I know what that feels like, to feel like you want to go have some sort of meeting or be taken seriously, and you feel like you have to, like, bring someone along with you to be taken seriously. I mean, it happens at the doctor's office. Like, of course it's going to happen in a meeting.
And again, my voice goes off in my head that goes, oh, that's a bunch of bullshit. Why couldn't you just get Ryan Coogler or Barry Jenkins to go with them? And it's like, yeah, the two directors that you can name. He just gets one of the two.
Right.
Or he gets one of the...
And these two, like, really famous people where it's like... if I can just get like my buddy Steve, like Steve, who's never done anything, is probably more likely to be able to get the meeting than me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's that it, that's they talked about this on Marin too.
Yeah.
The fallacy of. And it is blatantly biased. And it is, I think it comes from the place of just what you were talking about when your privilege is taken away, it can feel like oppression. But right. having the thought of, oh, well, that person just got the job because they were looking for a diversity hire, or oh, I'm not going to, you know, when you have, when you've been
mad.
In the position of my random friend Steve can get the job that I would have to bring in Barry Jenkins for them to consider.
Right.
A black director, but my random friend, when you've been in that position and then you're talking about like diversity hires, it's like, consider for a second before you consider that it was just a diversity hire, just consider that it's just that the competition pool has been opened up and you were outcompeted.
Right.
And it's that simple.
Yeah.
And just the fact that you wouldn't consider that, that you would consider first that, of course, this has to be some kind of liberal agenda, affirmative action. That of course you are more qualified and you are only beaten out because, like, that is insanely.
So it's so offensive to, like, I hate using the word offensive these days, but, like, it is offensive people think of you as, like, just a diversity hire and like, well, they just needed a girl. They just needed a, you know, queer person or a person of color. They just needed one. And it's like, well, they certainly don't need one. There are plenty of rooms that don't have a single one still, writers' rooms that don't have anyone who isn't a white guy. And it's like such a myth. It's such a fallacy and it's so gross and it's so arrogant to like come immediately from that perspective of like, oh, school's out.
Might hear the school bell right now. I don't know. I mean, hopefully maybe the blanket fort is protecting us from the school bell. But children will be screaming in 30 seconds. They will be screaming. And I don't know if we'll hear them or not. So just be ready for that, everyone. We'll see. What else here? Yeah, that's good. All right. Could you talk to me a little bit about your personal experience with this kind of stuff, being an LA actor, creator person? Have you had personal experience with feeling like it's hard to get a foot in or a word in or a meeting or a, you know?
I'm trying to think if there's a lot that's like industry related that I can definitely point to. But I feel like most of my experiences that have been industry related are the same as all the experiences I have everywhere else, where it's just sort of like that sort of not quite harmless, but mostly harmless sexist stuff. But honestly, like the people that I've actually worked with, I've been really lucky. And I've sort of pretty quickly fell into like a group of people who were like queer and female and like making stories that already are a little bit off of that like track. And so I didn't really feel, I haven't really felt here like I had to, as an actor, exist in any kind of like old stereotype, which is good. And
that's great to hear.
But then also I'm like, well, I feel like those people should be making a lot more moves than they have been because they were so good, still are so good. And I'm like, why aren't they all staff writers? Like, why?
Yeah. Not enough diversity hires to go around.
The
more talented white men still are taking
it. and in many cases, they, I don't know. I mean, it's complicated. But not so much. But I think what a lot of what does hold me back, I think, as a writer and as someone who's creating things, is me anticipating some of the things that I've seen happen to other people and just that fear of, like, not wanting to feel that feeling because it already feels so shitty as an actress to not be taken seriously that if it's then also my ideas that aren't being taken seriously, that is 1,000 times scarier. Like, I'm pretty used to, even though, like, I don't, like, type-wise, I don't usually find myself in a position where I'm, like, have to play the hot girl or, like, any of those sort of reductive things. it's still just sort of like, no one's going to hear me when I talk. No one cares what I think. Like, it doesn't matter what I have to say. But I'm an actress, and it's fine, and I'm here to do a job. But then I do have so much stuff that I want to make that I do definitely internalize a lot of those fears of, like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to get in a room. Anyway, it's already hard for everyone, and it's that much harder, and it just, like, stops me. I just get so blocked by that. And I don't know, that's a me problem, but I think it's also a broader problem that are just sort of interacting in a really frustrating way. I think a lot of people feel that.
Yeah, I think I knew that that question was going to be a little bit like, it's a little bit, put you on the spot. Like, like, come up with some stories right now of specifically where, but also I think that more depressing and more revealing is just that it's just like, you're like, what do you mean? Just like the everyday.
All the time?
Just yeah. The everything?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I can give you some, but why?
Of course that's the answer to that question. That it's just like,
yeah.
Well, I found really great people to collaborate with, but again, we're all just sort of doing our thing.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, and that's, you know, there's a thing that they talk about with, I feel like it's like a Thelma and Louise syndrome almost. Mm. Like Gina talked about remembering when Thelma and Louise came out, and it's the same thing we talked about with female directors not being allowed to create a body of work where yeah. it's like they did Thelma and Louise, and now it was like, great, we did it. We're yeah. done. You know, and it's – and I think that that's the thing too, is it's like you can find people to work with and everything, and everyone kind of goes, see, you're fine. Yeah, right. There you go. Go do your thing. Go do your weird little, you know, and like, and that's fine. You're good. And I think there's this idea that like, we've done it. We did it 20 years ago. Yeah. We did it 30 years ago. People have been seeing TV shows on, you know, since the 70s. We had the Jeffersons. We had, you right. know, and it's like, come on, we did this. We've crossed the, but it's, we still have, it's amazing yeah. how just opening the doors a little bit
yeah.
to new perspectives, just a little bit. And I still see it. It's like you make Crazy Rich Asians and everyone's like, cool, that ought to keep them quiet
right.
for a little bit. That yeah. ought to, you know, like, good, we did it, you
yeah.
know? And it's just like that shouldn't be – the thing that's amazing about that film is that it just was just –
like just a sweet little rom-com.
Just a sweet
just
little
a
rom-com.
Beautiful, big budget, sweet little rom-com.
That's it. And it doesn't need to be...
Well, and then you saw, I don't know if you did see, but one of the writers, she's an Asian woman, and she was going to be doing the sequel, and then she found out that a co-writer, who was a white guy, was getting paid, like, so much more than yep. she was, and she left the franchise, because and of course she did.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. But it brings me back, that whole, like, idea, it brings me back to... when Halle Berry won the Oscar,
mm-hmm.
And she got so emotional, and, you know, it's such a, like, iconic moment. But then she talks about it now, and she's like, I got so emotional because I thought that it signified a change. I thought that was a start and not an end. And, like, I think a lot of times that's how it feels. Like, someone who doesn't usually get to talk gets to talk or gets recognized or gets the money, and it feels like, oh, this is a good sign. Like, we're making progress and mm-hmm. this is change, when really that for other people that signifies a, like, here's that for now, but this is, the industry isn't changing. You were just a bit of, like, flavor. You were just a little bit of color to, like, what the industry really is.
Yeah.
And
a way for us to posture that
yeah.
real change had come, and now please go.
But it didn't. It didn't come.
Have you seen Whitney Cummings' new special
no,
on Netflix?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
She has a bit that I thought was really great, where she talks about, and I think that this also, I thought it was a very profound bit, because we're sort of really critical of sometimes the voice of the movement, or the voice of the way that we talk about these kinds of issues. People
right.
will be like, if it just wasn't so annoying, if,
yeah.
if everyone wasn't just so whining about it so much, you know, if they would just go out and do it. But she, the joke essentially was just like, she was like, hey, it's a bunch of people who have never been asked what we think before, and everyone, all of a sudden, everyone in the world is putting yeah. a microphone in our face and saying, what do you think? And we're like,
I don't know.
Well, hold on. Give me a second to get my thoughts together. And she's like, so ladies, we need to do a powwow and get our shit together and get our message on point, you know? And I was like, that's such a good way of putting it, that it's like, well, just give us a second. You've never asked us before right. what we think. And I, when you were talking about Halle Berry, that made me think about it. Like, someone who doesn't normally get to talk, who doesn't normally get to be here on this stage doing this. And getting excited for all the things we're going to get to say now.
Right.
And then it's like every few years you get Out, and then you get, you know, Black Panther. And you, like, and it's always kind of this token posture film that where we get to say, see, it's all good.
Well, and it's so hard to, like, the idea of, like, being an auteur as someone who isn't a white guy is hard because they get to be them. Like, they get to be Scorsese, and they get to be Tarantino, and the rest of us get to be female or black, and you're representing everyone. And there's all of this pressure to tell a story that represents everyone, and you can't. You can only tell your story, and it, I mean, that comes back to exactly what we were talking about in the beginning, that you're coming from your own point of view, but there is such an expectation for you to be the voice of group A instead of to be, you know, the singular man with the camera who's telling the story and is a visionary and is an artist. You're the voice of a political movement, and that sucks. Even though it's valuable, it's like, we just want to tell stories too.
Yeah.
And they're colored by, like, the political and social experiences that we have, but
of course,
it's still storytelling, and it's still being an artist. I don't know.
What do you think that the future hopefully looks like if we keep moving in a good direction with this, if we keep being kindly humbled and kindly opened up to new storytellers and new perspectives and new points of view? Because I think there are people, again, to be the antagonistic side of my voice, there are people that are just like, well, what's the end game here? Are we all just phased out and everything has to be every movie has to have exact demographic breakdowns of every neighborhood that, you know, there's kind of a thing you talked about, the reason why female directors have a harder time on Rotten Tomatoes is that most movie critics are white men. Mm-hmm. And, Brie Larson talked about this. She said something like 67% of critics in the industry are white men.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people heard that and they were like, well, does every job have to have a correct demographic breakdown? And I don't know, does it? I really genuinely am like, I don't know what the end game is. I don't know if that's the idea behind what she's saying there, that it's like, we need to get exact percentage breakdown, or is it just a world where we're all more open and more used to these different kinds of stories?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think gradually, like, a better society will create more equitable hiring practices, and you'll just, in theory, you would see that start to happen naturally, not because of, like, forced, like, quotas, but because people are just allowed to do what they want to do and don't have as many barriers. But that's a super optimistic, like, view of how that would go and how long that would take. I have no, I don't know, man. I go back and forth. Sometimes I'm so optimistic and I'm so hopeful and so excited, but then other times I'm like, I don't know, like, we've seen it all before.
Yeah.
I do think the internet is huge for that. I mean, that's an understatement, but I do think that that's a huge collective push, because things are able to be amplified to an extent. I mean, you're always sort of battling an algorithm now instead of battling a network executive. But I do think that the internet is able to amplify voices that couldn't otherwise be heard before. So the optimistic side of me thinks that that is good, but, you know, then I think about what's happening on Twitter and Facebook on a daily basis, and I'm like, I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah, it's gnarly out there.
Yeah, I had to leave all of those things.
I think there was a time where I was very optimistic about that, and I thought, this is the wave of the future. This is where people can have healthy discourse if they can get out of their own way and stop with the name-calling and stop with the antagonistic trolling. They can have really meaningful discussions. And I was really trying to engage people that I disagreed with in meaningful, thoughtful discussions, and sometimes I could. But I found out more often than not, I would get pulled into a frustration, and it would become derogatory and become name-calling. Or just tone is very hard to interpret. Yeah. And eventually I just went, I think, first of all, I thought, maybe my perspective just isn't needed here, and maybe I can just let these people argue amongst themselves. And then really I kind of thought, this doesn't seem – it seems to be way – less useful than useful. It seems like most of it is just noise, and it's really hard to know which discussions you could involve yourself in that would actually be fruitful and actually be educational.
Yeah.
And it seems like there has to be, obviously, it is a good tool, and I think you're right to be optimistic, and I think so am I, at least initially, to think this is a great way of communicating and talking about these things, but there have to be better ways than just screaming at each other
section,
in
the
comment section.
I have noticed a trend towards some more nuance happening on YouTube, weirdly. Like, I feel like, bizarrely, the push for longer watch time started to encourage people to make longer and longer videos, right? And so then you see the rise of this, like, super long video essay. And I think some of that is really good because some of the speed of the internet takes away a lot of nuance. And then when suddenly you have this, you know, admittedly monstrous website that's trying to capitalize on your attention, pushing longer and longer videos, the great thing is that the good creators who are out there trying to make, like, nuanced, complicated points of view can. And I think that's a great place right now. Again, it's also terrible because by the same token,
everyone gets to make
those super long videos. And Alex Jones can, you know, I don't know, I'm sure he's probably been deplatformed off of YouTube, but like that kind of person.
Everybody gets a voice.
And I like to think that the person making the best argument with the most compassion at the end will win, but who knows if that will bear out into reality. But I don't know.
Oh, and I've got whole other episodes that I want to talk about the internet with people on, because I mean, the fact that it's like we get to be all connected, but we also get to see the underbelly of society that we actually, it's like, oh no, everyone has a place to be heard, including really truly terrifying people who have like communities of terrifying people where they talk about terrifying things, and it's all there, and it's
it feels bigger than it really is, because when you're immersed in it, it feels like the whole world.
Yeah.
When in reality, you know, there probably aren't that many Nazis.
No.
But man, they're able to cause a lot of damage because they suddenly feel empowered by being able to talk to every single other one of them.
There's not that many incels. There's not that many, but there's enough that they have a community and you can find their community. And they are horrifying.
And it's not like some weird little like KKK barbecue with like 12 people in weird robes.
Yeah, right.
It's 1,400 people in a forum where you're allowed to say whatever
like,
you want.
Oh my God.
It feels like the whole world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
always comes back to Nazis with me.
Always comes back to Nazis. Yeah, I don't know.
Was that supposed to be the optimistic end note, and I fucked it up?
But I don't, I mean, I was talking with a friend about this the other day about, it was a different issue, but I was kind of like saying like, well, what's the end goal here? And he was like, there isn't an end goal. We just continue to change and we continue to do better. And I was like, yeah, I guess I've never thought of it like that. It always seems like we're building towards something, that we're heading toward some utopic new place. But at least in our lifetime, I don't think that we're going to get there. Mm. And I don't think that we'll, you know, I mean, hopefully if the planet survives, we'll see.
The planet will survive. We might not.
But do you feel hopeful? Do you feel like things are at least heading in the right direction? I think if you look at the scope of history, it seems like, yes, we are making the baby steps toward the right things. But is that all just the way that I want to see it? Am I patting myself on the back? Am I, you know?
It's like the, what is it, the arc of justice is, or the arc of time or history is long, but it bends toward justice or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't know.
I mean, we're a long ways from burning people for being witches, and we're a long ways from... But then you could go, sort of.
Like,
kind of not, I don't know.
I guess it comes back to what I'm hopeful about is that the people who feel like their voice is being taken away as other people's voices are lifted up, if those people can turn that frustration to listening and amplifying other voices and collaborating with people who are different and hearing the feedback that they're getting, then I'm hopeful. But if it does become this like cacophony of anger and you stole my toy, then I don't know if I am.
Yeah. Because, my voice went off when you talked about listening. That's a little bit of a buzzword, I think, for a lot of people in my social group right now, where whenever they're told, hey, can you just listen? If you could just listen, what they hear is, so I'm just supposed to sit down and shut up and not participate in the conversation now. I'm just supposed to just be a student, and everyone teaches me. And, you know, and it's like this very off, but I think that, like, instantly going to the defensive, speaking here as a person who's done it.
Right.
And as a person who's trying.
And is trying really hard.
To do better.
It's not easy.
But it.
You know, it's not easy. I mean, I've definitely, like, felt the same way where it's like, well, fuck you. Like, my voice isn't getting heard. Like, how, you know, like, yeah. Either. And that sort of, like, I hate the phrase, but, like, the oppression Olympics kind of thing.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, I feel like as long as we all just, like, keep making stuff and keep trying to watch as much as we can and consume the good things, consume the things that are exciting and different and have a dialogue through art and creativity, that makes me hopeful. But I find myself, like, not able to just end it on the hopeful note.
I think that's fine.
Bleak,
no,
man.
But I, you know, it seems right.
I'm not giving you a good soundbite.
And I think most these things, no, most these topics that I'm talking with people about, we usually get to the end and it's like, we didn't fix shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly how it goes.
I think
the idea here is that I'm having the conversations that I have with people anyways.
Yeah.
And I just figure I might as well just record it because
why
not? Well, you know, somebody might want to listen to us talk about representation and point of view and storytelling.
Us two white people.
But we're certainly not. Yeah, us two white people.
In a nice living room.
Uh-huh. In my blanket fort here. We're certainly not going to fix it, and we're certainly not going to go, and here's how it gets better.
Yeah.
You know, when I talk about anger with my friend John, we're not going, and here's how we fix the anger in all men across the world and effectively stop violent crime.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, and I feel like I want to say here near the end, I've been intentionally kind of having you dumb down these ideas for me and for, because I need it. And also I feel like there are people who, like, it needs to be broken down. And so I feel like there might be people who listen to this and they're like, Jesus Christ, you keep, like, don't make her explain that. Like, I've even felt like there's a few times where I'm like, does this sound ridiculous? That I'm like, and can you explain what it's like when someone doesn't want to hear it?
Yeah.
Like,
no.
But it's like, I think that, that's what can be maybe interpreted when people talk about listening, is it's just like, it doesn't mean you don't get to speak ever, and it doesn't mean that you don't get to participate and that you don't get to play too. It just means, like, before you instantly go to, well, does this mean that I don't get to speak? Just take a second and try to give the person the benefit of the doubt, and I don't know.
Yeah.
this is me still trying to wrap it up with a nice, here's how I'm still trying to give it this upturn, but I don't know. Maybe I should stop trying to fix it. I should stop trying to be a hero.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's going to fix it, if anything will, is everyone who doesn't feel heard trying to be heard and trying to make stuff. And it's so simple, but that's true, to just like keep on fighting to make the thing you want to make and say the thing you need to say.
Well, and that's an interesting thing too, that we probably don't have time left to explore, but just the idea that the world we've come from and the world that we've been living in is the water that everyone's been swimming in.
It's
the ocean that everyone's been swimming in. And so I think the defensiveness can come from one group or other feeling like, well, is this solely my responsibility to fix? Like, is everyone just putting this on me as the person I caused it and I need to fix it?
Right.
And it's like, no, this is the water that we have all been swimming in. And that water happens to be made up of less privileged and more privileged and less advantaged and more advantaged people, of all different walks of life. But none of this is to assign blame or to assign responsibility of you need to fix this. But it is just to say, like, God, just go as far as just to acknowledge the reality of the water. Acknowledge that, like, you are a fish swimming in this water.
Yeah.
And that some of you happen to be sharks and some of you happen to be minnows. And, you know, that sounds worse. That sounds like people are meant to be. I'm making it worse at the end, but
metaphor is dangerous.
The water
was that an example of an artist revealing himself?
That is an example of subconscious revealing of me calling myself a shark and everyone else is just fish for me to eat.
We have to just be nice to the minnows.
We need to fish are friends, not food. Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, there it is. I just did it.
There it is.
But I think I was trying to make an argument for the long form essay that you were talking about earlier. And not that, because I really do agree with you so much about wanting more nuance in our conversations and wanting more details. And I feel like everything gets boiled down to buzzwords and to little simple digestible nuggets where it's like, everything's a more complex issue than just this person did this and it's bad because of this.
Right.
And it's like with this, I'm like, if people don't listen to the end, they might just turn it off going like, God, is this guy an idiot? You know, and I am. spoiler alert. But I do want people to know that I'm intentionally being like, can we break this down into little so that it, I don't know, becomes a little bit more digestible for me and for all.
Yeah. And Lord knows I can get fucking carried away with myself. And
no, I thought you did wonderful. I thought that it was excellent. I think there was some really good stuff. Do you feel all right? Do you feel good?
I feel like I did good emotional labor today. Thanks for asking me to provide emotional labor. No, I feel great.
Wonderful. Do you have anything you'd like to talk about or plug or anything like that?
Oh, God, no. Jesus like Christ.
Is your YouTube channel still going? Or?
No. God, no. It's so fucking hard. People who do YouTube are amazing. It's so hard.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
And also, I mean, like, I was doing scripted content, which, like, is just an extra fucking step, and I had no equipment, and I was just, like, trying to coerce my friends into making stupid political sketches with me. So, no. God, no. That's done. But I have sort of had fun dipping my toe into, like, different, like, waters of creating your own content. It's sort of like baby steps toward actually making a thing that I'm proud of.
Podcasts are the thing that everyone wants to do. It's like, oh, so I just talk about anything and I don't need, I'll just start it. And
And then of course, when I made a podcast, it was like a fucking scripted, like, experimental, like, what's wrong with me?
You're going to burn yourself out. I mean, even with my little intros that I do, I'm like, oh no, I'm going to burn myself out. I'm making more work for
really
myself than I need
this
to.
So perfectly. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, no, God, no, I have nothing to plug.
Well, you're great.
You're great.
Thanks for coming
having
here.
Me over. I'm so glad you live in town. I'm really glad that you're here in LA.
Yeah, me too.
Alrighty. And of course, I immediately moved to the other side of the city, so we might as well still be in two different places. But it's good
to see
you.
You're here. You're here right now, and we're doing stuff. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right.
It's funny. I mentioned Thelma and Louise several times in that interview, and the truth is, I've never even seen it. All I know is that it was a significant mile marker movie for films led by women in Hollywood, and that just feels so odd to me. Weren't there others like it before? Also, Ridley Scott directed it. Like, nothing groundbreaking there. The more interesting narrative is how this became the high watermark for progress in female-led movies in the first place. The fact that the movie was a big deal at all seems to say more about the state of the entertainment industry and society at large than it does about the actual content of the film. It shouldn't have been such a big moment to have a movie starring two women in 1991, right? That should have been more common by then. Just like it shouldn't have been such a massive deal to have a rom-com about an Asian couple in 2018, but it was. And that's really frustratingly telling. So maybe what I learned from the conversation is this. We need to keep telling these stories until it's not such an earth-shattering novelty every time we see one of them. Until they're more commonplace. Or maybe I should just stop trying to tie this episode up in a neat little bow. I don't know. For now, I think I'm just gonna go see if Mary wants to watch Thelma and Louise at home or go see Queen and Slim at the AMC down the street. People Pleaser is written, produced, edited, and hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original music also by me. You can find more of my music and other projects at austin-archer.com or by searching Austin Archer in Apple Music or Spotify. If you want to learn more about my guest today, I believe you can still find her videos on YouTube by searching Marza versus the Internet. She'll probably kill me for saying this. She was being very modest during the interview, but you should look up her stuff. There's some good yucks to be had on that page. Also, you can hear her podcast, Bailey Was Cursed by a Witch, wherever you listen to podcasts. I think that's also still up. Tune in next week when my guest will be Sean Sacchino. You want to talk about representation. Sean is gay and Asian, so that's like two whole things right there. We're going to talk about drugs, and it's going to get weird, so see you there. I think that's all I've got. Rate and subscribe. Okay, bye.